So these non-denominational churches, whether they realize it or not, have been targeting men for 40 years. They've become much more influential. Their budgets have grown. Their attendance has grown. Their influence over the publishing industry has grown. It's been very, very healthy. It's been a resurgence of what I would call the masculine spirit in the church. The theological orthodoxy and conservatism appeals to men who are more concerned with I have a maxim. I would say men will sacrifice relationships on the altar of rules, whereas women will sacrifice rules on the altar of relationships. And so churches that are theologically orthodox, that have strong rules, attract men. Those who will bend the rules in order to accommodate relationships are more attractive to women, particularly older women. And so this is the attendance pattern that we see in our churches today. The liberal churches are run by grandmas, and the conservative churches are run by young firebrand men.
Welcome to the Throwing Mountains podcast, where men are rediscovering courageous leadership and drawing strength from stories of God working in the lives of ordinary men today. Men who've become leaders in their spheres of influence by relying on God and following Jesus. Host Mike Hatch is off this week. I'm co-host Chris Bollinger, and I'm bringing you highlights from two interviews with David Murrow. Dave is the author of at least five books, including Why Men Hate Going to Church, which has sold over 200,000 copies. In our first interview with Dave, he drew from that book, as well as other research he's done, to recommend ways that churches can get much more effective at attracting and retaining men. Those recommendations are included in the first half of this episode. Dave's final recommendation has to do with sharpening a church's online content. A few years ago, Dave started an initiative called the Online Preaching Coach, and in the second half of this episode, he'll provide details on why compelling online content is the key to reaching young adults, especially young men. At the end of the episode, I'll give you pointers to the complete interviews so you can get all the details. Here's David Murrow.
I'm a media professional. I work in the television business. And one of the first things you learn when you're doing commercials or specials or programs is there's a target audience for every channel on the dial and every program on that channel or every commercial. And I was just sitting in church one day and realized the target audience of my church was a middle-aged woman. The way the church was decorated with quilts and flowers and ribbons and felt banners and child-style construction paper, bulletin boards, it just had the feeling of an elementary school. Mm. And the church was wearing a robe and stole, and there was, you know, flowers and candles, and all the opportunities were, the volunteer opportunities were cooking and teaching and caring for children and caring for the sick. And, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking, oh, my gosh, you know, this whole enterprise is targeted at a woman and has almost nothing to animate the heart of a young man. Hmm. So that's kind of what started my journey. And then I'd always noticed that almost every gathering, anytime I gathered with other Christians, the gender ratio was usually 60-40. So I started doing some research thinking I was going to do a documentary because I'm a filmmaker. But I got some really good advice to go ahead and put it down in a book, and off it goes. Then the rest is history. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, the New York Times is featuring it, and it got a lot of media attention. The president of Promise Keepers invited me to come to one of his rallies and say, what are we doing wrong here? You know, how can we make this, you know, it was a meteoric rise in the mid 2000s. And, you know, I'm sad to say that, you know, 16 years after the publication of the book, we're still fighting this. We still have a gender gap. Women are dropping out of church at a faster rate than men now. However, the gap persists. So it's definitely a problem that we need to keep our eyes on.
Dave, had you been in church most of your life at this point when you first realized this? And what do you think prompted you to realize something that you probably had witnessed for a long time, just never really been aware of it?
Well, I had, you know, bumped in and out of church when I was a little kid, became a follower of Jesus, you know, got saved at 15, and then got really serious about my faith after that, and attended a Christian college, Baylor University, where, you know, Christianity was everywhere. And that's when I really started to begin to notice that there was sort of a feminine feel to a lot of what we did. It was just at the beginning of the praise and worship movement. And a lot of the songs, the sentiments, the old hymns, you know, Onward Christian Soldiers, it kind of had that battle feel. Those were being replaced by, you know, Jesus, I'm so in love with you. And it had this dreamy romantic feel. And I began to realize, oh, and then I also did an internship at Word Records, which was one of the, you know, Amy Grant and a lot of the big Jesus music stars of the 70s and 80s were published on Word Records. And, you know, I just began to notice that so many of our products kind of had that breezy feminine feel. They were really targeted more at women than men. There really was no men's ministry material at all in the 80s. It simply didn't exist until two men, Pat Morley and Edwin Lewis Cole, came out with books. Pat Morley wrote Man in the Mirror and Edwin Lewis Cole wrote Maximized Manhood. And those were really the first two men's ministry books. So then Promise Keepers came along in the 90s and the profile of men's ministry really increased. But yeah, back in those early days, I began to notice that everything in the church was being skewed toward women because women bought most of the Christian products.
Interesting. Yeah, I was going to ask you, what was it, do you think historically that kind of led to church being so feminized?
Well, feminization has come and gone over the years. The most recent wave of feminization began in the Victorian era when economic conditions changed and large numbers of able-bodied men went off to work in mines, mills, and factories, and they left their families behind. And so what you had is an attendance profile in the local church of women, children, and aged men. And that pattern persisted all the way through World War I and World War II. Church attendance hit its low point during the Great Depression. Men were scrapping for work. They were trying to find work wherever they could. Women were left home to take care of the church. In post-war America, we had the resurgence of church attendance. We had the joiner, the builder generation. They joined everything. They joined Kiwanis clubs, Rotary, and they joined their local church. And so we saw this huge resurgence of men. Church attendance reached its absolute peak. Mission work was at its peak. It was a really excellent time for the church. But then we began to see male attendance tail off, particularly in the mainline churches, which began to skew very liberal in the 70s. They became hotbeds of anti-war activism. They opened their governing boards to women, and they brought in more feminism and sort of some anti-men attitudes. And so we began to see men withdraw from those institutions. And that's what we find ourselves today, is in a situation where young Christians, having never seen a committed Christian man, are deconstructing their faith. In large part because, especially boys, because they have no idea what a Christian man looks like. They've never really seen one other than a pastor who gets paid to be a Christian.
Yeah, I'm just curious. So churches had a lot of men after World War II, and you said that in the mainline churches, they tended to skew more liberal at that point and began to lose their men. What happened in the non-mainline churches? Do we see similar trends there, or have they been able to retain the men more?
No, the sort of the non-denominational movement has been very successful at reaching men. The two of the great pioneers of that movement were men by the name of Bill Hybels, who in 1975 went door to door and asked people why they didn't want to go to church. And he found that most of the resistance was among the men. And so he created a mythical churchgoer called Unchurched Harry. And they focused their entire building, their music, their preaching, the building, the decor, everything was focused on getting that guy in the door, realizing that if you got him in the door, you'd get the family in the deal. 5 years later, a penniless Baptist preacher by the name of Rick Warren established Saddleback Church, and he did the exact same thing. He created a mythical parishioner called Saddleback Sam. And Saddleback Sam was his target. He didn't bother going after the women and children. He knew they would come. If he could get the guy in the pew, he knew that he would get the rest of the family in the deal. So these non-denominational churches, whether they realize it or not, have been targeting men for 40 years, and they've grown. They've become much more influential. Their budgets have grown. Their attendance has grown. Their influence over the publishing industry has grown. It's been very, very healthy. It's been a resurgence of what I would call the masculine spirit in the church. They've remained, most of them have remained politically conservative, not politically, theologically conservative, excuse me, and politically too. But the theological orthodoxy and conservatism appeals to men who are more concerned with I have a maxim. I would say men will sacrifice relationships on the altar of rules, whereas women will sacrifice rules on the altar of relationships. And so churches that are theologically orthodox, that have strong rules, attract men. Those who will bend the rules in order to accommodate relationships are more attractive to women, particularly older women. And so this is the attendance pattern that we see in our churches today. The liberal churches are run by grandmas, and the conservative churches are run by young firebrand men.
Interesting. Do you think, because I, with the non-denominational, or sometimes referred to as interdenominational churches, there's also this church planting movement that happens often out of that. And I've heard it said before, and I guess I'm asking if you find this to be true as well, that in church planting, do you see a lot of men involved in that?
Absolutely. Almost every church planter is a man with a beard. and like 17 kids. No, it is true. Most of the revitalization efforts and planting efforts are spearheaded by men. It's interesting. Religion News Service, which is a very liberal religion outlet, just did a story on six female church planters of color. And their theology was just so, you know, BIPOC, Black Lives Matter, LGBTQ, nothing about, you know, personal transformation or whatever. It was just so lefty. You could just tell these churches weren't going to get any traction because they're never going to appeal to a young man. That's not why he comes to church. You know, young men come to church for transformation. They come for miracles. They come for strength. They come for to bring order to their disordered lives. They want Jordan Peterson. You know, they don't want Mother Teresa comforting them. Yeah. So I think the church planting movements has been led by men primarily because they appeal to young men, and that young men are the key demographic that you have to get into the door if you want to build a sustainable church. You know, it started with Jesus. Jesus went out and found six men, six women, and he started a children's ministry, right? No, he went out and found 12 dirty guys off the street and built the organization that literally changed history.
What have you seen on the men's ministry front since writing the book initially in 2005, and how have you been involved in that?
Well, what I've seen is the high water mark of men's ministry was probably the Stand in the Gap, Promise Keepers, 1997, 7 years after the first Promise Keepers rally. Enthusiasm began to tail off after that. Promise Keepers made a catastrophically bad decision in 1998 to stop charging admission to their stadium events, thinking that would increase attendance. It suppressed attendance. One of the things you learn in men's ministry is if you don't charge men a little bit of money, they won't show up. And so Promise Keepers learned that the hard way. But there have also been several high profile flameouts of men in church who have abused women, and feminist groups have latched onto this and they have brought a lot of dishonor to men's ministry. They've made it seem creepy. And there's just not a lot of pastors now look at the continued crucifixion of Mark Driscoll. Driscoll was probably the most effective pastor to men we had in the early 2000s. He admittedly had some missteps there, some sin in his life, was forced to step down. His ministry was dismantled. It was an ugly, ugly scene, but it served as a cautionary tale to other pastors who might want to aggressively reach out to men. You don't touch this third rail, or they'll find some dirt on you and they will put you under it. And so, I think the final nail in the coffin of men's ministry was the Church Too movement, which came out of the Me Too movement. There has been a lot of energy against men in the church to accuse men of being abusers. And what's interesting is no women have really stood up in their defense. I follow a lot of Christian women's sites on social media, and they are uniformly negative toward men, how abusive Christian men are, how the church enables abuse, how Christian men are just the worst. They're just awful. You'd do better to marry a non-Christian. Even some of them even go as far as to say that. So, there's definitely a tide against men's ministry right now. And it's just going to, I think that fire is just going to have to burn itself out. And then enough women are going to realize, you know, maybe we've overdone this here in trying to root out abusive men. We have turned all men off the church, and we need to do something, including our sons. And we need to do something about this, because nothing in the church happens without the authorization of women.
Okay, David. So we get all kinds of listeners. Some of them are church staff folks. So we've got pastors, men's ministry leaders, and so on. You know, they feel you, right? I mean, they understand this. They see it firsthand. So help them out. What are some things they can do on a week in, week out basis that will begin to attract more men and energize the men, activate the men, get the men involved in the life of the church, as well as more active in pursuing Christ, following Christ in their personal lives?
Well, what most pastors and ministry leaders don't realize is how feminine so much of what we do appears to a man. And so I encourage, as a first step, just walk through the church and look how it's decorated. I mean, does it look like it was decorated by grandma? Or does it look like a place where men gather? Now, you don't have to put neon beer signs in the sanctuary, but I do know churches that have mounted animal heads that hunters have taken in their sanctuaries.
Cool.
And they've immediately seen an uptake and increase in men.
Right, right.
I heard a woman was objecting to this, and he says, you know, and the pastor looked at her, he says, how many quilts are there in the Bible? None. Well, how many dead animals? They're on every page of the Old Testament. So, how does the church look? Men are visual. They walk in and if they see a space that's highly feminized, they will immediately believe that this is something for their wives and kids and their grandmothers. Hmm. Police your language. Look at the songs you're singing. Is it all Jesus, you're my boyfriend, I'm so passionate, I want to make love to you? Is that the feel of our worship? Do our songs make us sound like we're heading to the bedroom or to the battlefield? So that would be one thing. And then, of course, the sermons you preach. If you're a pastor, you should be very wary about continually preaching about family and relationships. Create a sermon series that are titled that men would want to invite their friends, you know, money, sex, and power, you know, dominance, these sorts of themes, survival. These sorts of themes that appeal to men, adopt those in your teaching, and you'll see more men showing up. And then just on a practical level, this is going to be true for men or women in the future. I just this morning read an article that says the dominant platform now for video consumption on earth is TikTok. Mm. More people are watching video on TikTok than any other platform on earth.
Wow.
And the average TikTok is 37 seconds.
Yep. That's because they're getting sucked into Instagram and Facebook too. So TikTok is now taking over the social media world.
It is. It is the future of communication. So what I say to pastors now is, if you cannot say it in 30 seconds, your voice is going to be drowned out.
Yep.
So pastors, you must shorten your messages, and you must learn ways to clip material out and repurpose it on social media.
Yep.
This is what pastors aren't getting.
A key partner for the Throwing Mountains podcast is the men's ministry CLC, Christ-Led Communities. CLC strives to build authentic community through the uncommon pursuit of Christ, and it has had an incredible impact on the lives of tens of thousands of men, including Mike Hatch and me. If you're like most men, then you have many male acquaintances, but few or even no trusted male friends. With CLC, you'll join with other men around the person and work of Jesus Christ, and powerful things will happen. You'll see masks removed and honest brotherhood begin. CLC is much more than a Bible study. It's a relational pathway that equips men for a lifetime of biblically based leadership. For more information, go to clchq.org or email Mike Hatch at mhatch@clchq.org.
And a lot of the hymns were very masculine. You know, they talked about what we're going. The difference is not even whether it's girly or manly. It's whether hymns talk about what we're going to do.
Right.
Praise songs talk about how we feel. Mm. And, you know, men tend to be more mission oriented. Women tend to be more feeling oriented, emotion oriented. Women feel comforted when they have all their people around them and everyone's doing well. Men feel comforted when they know what they're out to achieve. I know these are huge, you know, generalizations, and there are women who are mission oriented. There are men who are feeling oriented. But having said that, the majority of men are going to feel comforted when they know what their mission is. You know, what am I here to accomplish?
Right.
And so I think that has to pervade your organization. You have to be talking about your mission constantly. Men have to feel a sense of progress. You know, when the pandemic hit and church quit, one of the biggest advices I was giving to pastors is you got to be telling people that the church is closed. We can't see each other anymore. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you have to be telling your members two things. You have to be giving them testimonies of life change so that people know that they're still in the life change business. And you have to be showing them the hands and feet of Jesus serving in the community. Mm. You know, so you're constantly placing in front of your members what your church is accomplishing, or they're just going to quit.
One last question I have is, I have also encountered this movement of the church recently moving out. And so now I know some churches, like in North Carolina, here in Western Pennsylvania, I've seen them too, where they're no longer as tied into the church building and meeting together in a service, but they're out in the community and their meetings are happening in homes, or they're intentionally entering into certain social spaces like gyms, or coffee shops, things like that, in order to minister to people there. I'm curious, what do you think? Do you think men will grab a hold of that, or do you? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's dangerous. It's missional. You're talking about the Francis Chan model. You'd come together once a month for group teaching and singing, but your main emphasis is these smaller groups. Yeah, I do. I do think that's going to be one future manifestation of the church. It's also, and if persecution comes, I would say this distributed church model is going to be much less subject to government sanction than the model that we have now. So I really hate to put any sort of limit on God. And when I hear of these new things, my mind is very open and my heart is very open to see what God does through them. So if your church wants to meet in a bar, wants to meet at a meet in a gym, meet at a mechanic shop, you know, if you want to take church to the world, then I say, go for it. And I think the men will get that even more than the women do.
But then I also think, to your point, if it's distributed like that, it reemphasizes or rehighlights the significance of the online communication.
Right. Well, absolutely. Right? Yeah. Cause that's where you're going. That's going to be your main draw. It's not going to be an assembly on Sunday morning. It's going to be social media. It's going to be short videos, things that you post that people see, pick up and share virally. And, yeah, it's going to be a challenge as we make this transition, but I certainly hope. Well, the other thing that's going to make this less appealing to women, though, is women have for the past 30, 40, 50 years have spearheaded the move to church because of the discipleship of their children. Now, if your church is meeting in a bar or meeting at a gym, how do you do children's ministry? The fact is you don't.
Right.
Now, what I would say to those moms is, don't worry. If dad is being transformed, if you're being transformed, you don't need a children's ministry. Your children just need to see you becoming kinder, gentler, more filled with the Spirit than to hear, you know, yet another story of Zacchaeus climbing a tree. The first is going to be so much more powerful than the latter. So if you want to do a distributed church out in the community, that's a great way to do it. Don't worry about your kids. They will follow your example way more than what they're taught in Sunday school.
Well, your online preaching coaching is going to help in this area too, because if a pastor can get a message boiled down to 30 seconds or a couple of minutes that's video appropriate, who is going to be able to pick up on that? The dads are, the fathers are, the men are going to pick up on that. And then who are they going to turn to? They're going to turn to their kids and say, hey, here's what I learned today, and pass that down. So that's the perfect teaching, right? I mean, you don't need an hour of children's programming. You've got dad telling you something that he just learned today.
Yeah. Social media is perfect format for that. Hey, look, this pastor cracking egg on his head to illustrate, you know, embarrassment or, you know, whatever it is. I mean, this is the other thing that pastors don't understand, is that we've become a visual culture. There is no place now in our society where people sit down for 40-minute lectures. Even colleges and universities are moving away from that model. mm-hmm. and going toward experiential learning. Mm-hmm. So pastors were being left behind. It's our love for the pulpit that's leaving us behind. And so what I'm going to be doing is challenging pastors to, yes, you still want your 40-minute sermon, that's fine, but it has to break down into smaller pieces. There has to be stronger visual content so that you can compete in this visual medium. Mm-hmm. If it's just you standing there with a black Bible, nobody's going to watch that. So it's a challenge to get pastors reoriented around this, because they really do love the pulpit. If I be honest, they love the spotlight. When you ask a pastor, why did you get into the ministry? What do they say? I was called to preach. I mean, that's their focus. Yep. It's not, I was called to lead meetings, or I was called to, you know, clean toilets or whatever. No, I was called to preach. They see themselves as preachers. And so mm-hmm. I'm threatening them by saying, you have to alter the way you preach. But the mm-hmm. pastors that are doing that are being rewarded with huge online presence, huge impact, and the leading of souls to Christ. And that for me is mm-hmm. the payoff. It's mm-hmm. not my 40 minutes in the pulpit. It's lives changed.
So this started 20 years ago when I wrote a book called Why Men Hate Going to Church. Mm-hmm. And in recent months, I've realized I still hate going to church. And I am not alone. And I'm beginning to realize what my frustration is. Going to church is like trying to play golf with a shovel. You'll hit a lucky shot now and then, but you're not going to win the tournament. What we do in church and the way we teach the gospel now is so far behind the way people encounter their ideas now that we are losing the battle, not only for attention, but for relevance. In about 2004, something called social media started, and it changed the marketplace of ideas. Prior to social media, the way people got their ideas was to assemble in a lecture hall. People put on their finest clothing, they assembled in a lecture hall, and they sat and listened while a learned man stood on a stage and spoke to them for 30, 50, 75 minutes. All the baby boomers, all our age and younger, we understand this format. Yeah. The children we are raising have never been exposed to this. They have no idea how to pay attention for 30, 60, 90 minutes. Yet the church places the gospel, the most important message on earth, into this antiquated format each week. And we pay our pastors to do this for us. Meanwhile, we are losing the culture because we do not know how to communicate the gospel quickly and visually, because that's the new marketplace of ideas. Quick, visual content that gets people to think about things and talk about things. Now, amazingly, there's this book called The Bible. Have you ever read it?
I love the Bible. The Bible is a great book.
Of quick visual content. Have you ever read the Proverbs? Yeah. The average proverb takes about 5 seconds. I timed the parables of Jesus. Do you know what the median length of a parable of Jesus is? 38 seconds. The Bible is built on micro content. And yet when we try to teach people, we talk to them for 30, 60, 90 minutes. And so the problem isn't the gospel. It's not our message. It's our method. And so this is why I've started the online preaching coach. I'm teaching pastors how to make their sermons watchable, memorable, and shareable. And it starts by making it more visual and shorter. I use the example of Sears. Sears had millions of faithful customers. In 1969, Sears was the world's largest retailer. I recently learned that in 1969, $1 out of every 100 spent in America went through Sears.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Wow.
By 49 years later, Sears filed bankruptcy. Now, what happened? Did Sears stop selling products? Did they make bad products? No. What happened is the marketplace shifted from paper catalogs and suburban malls to big box discounters and the internet. They still had the product that people needed, but nobody was shopping there anymore. This is the premise of what I'm teaching pastors. The marketplace of ideas has shifted from paper books and lecture halls to the internet. This is why 30% of young people now identify as, it's not like there was sudden 30% of our population was LGBTQ. Yeah. It's because they are consuming online content that grabs their attention right away, that is visually interesting, that appeals to them quickly, and they are being discipled by it. And what the church is saying is, we're just not going to compete there. Hmm. You know, if you've got 40 minutes, I can tell you about Jesus. If you've got 40 seconds, I've got nothing for you. Every church plays contemporary Christian music on Sunday morning. It is the de facto way we praise God. Okay. Even though there was opposition at the first. Now, why did we change from hymns to contemporary worship? Because the audience changed. And not only their tastes, but their relationship with music changed. It became a cultural signifier. You can remember when you were young, the bands you liked really identified who you were. Yep. If you were a girl, you liked Barry Manilow. You liked ABBA. Even today, you like Taylor Swift if you're a girl. No man would like Taylor Swift or even admit liking Taylor Swift.
Except for Travis Kelce. Yeah,
he's the only guy who can like Taylor Swift. The music became a cultural signifier because here's what changed. We began carrying our music around with us on transistor radios, on cassette in our cars, Walkman. And then with Walkmans.
Yeah.
So music became something, not just an entertainment thing, it became our cultural signifier. So the church responded by changing the music to match the culture. Now, in the last 15 years, information and ideas have become cultural signifiers. We're moving into warring tribes based on the types of information we consume. The church has not reformatted the gospel for this new reality. We continue to preach as if the lecture hall is where people get their ideas, and the best way to teach is these long monologue lectures. Well, even schools and universities are getting rid of lectures. Everybody's doing it except us, because our baby boomers who are paying the bills in the church like the monologue lecture.
The Throwing Mountains podcast is part of the BiblicalLeadership.com podcast network. The vision of BiblicalLeadership.com is to lift up Christ, spread his word, and edify, encourage, and spark boldness in his servants around the world. The Bible is, of course, a guide to eternal life, but it's also a real-world guide to living, providing guidance on a broad range of topics, including marriage, parenting, faith, work, and leadership. The folks at BiblicalLeadership.com provide rich content and resources that help leaders use the Bible as a practical leadership manual every day. Be sure to check out BiblicalLeadership.com today.
Well, in Acts 2:42, it says they met daily in the temple courts under the apostles' teaching. Now, the problem pastors have faced for 500 years, ever since Martin Luther invented the modern sermon, is people only come to the building once a week. And so you had to assemble this 40-minute brain dump. You had to tell them everything they needed to know for the week. You give them this big plate of food and you say, all right, eat this during the week. I'll see you next week. About 15 years ago, we got something called the internet, where you can email out daily content. And there's a few pastors who are figuring this out, but I've not found a pastor yet who builds it off of his sermon. Mm. And I think this is going to be the key. If you could preach a shorter, more visual sermon, a video sermon that's anywhere from 5 to 7 minutes long. Okay, so let's go to Sunday morning. Let me back up a little minute. So let's say your service is an hour long. You sing your songs, you have your announcements, pastor gets up into the pulpit and he does an introduction to his sermon live. Hello, everybody. He does all the stuff that doesn't work on video. Gets it all out of the way, right? Yeah. Here's some background on the text. Here's where we are in our series, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Now he says, now I'm going to play a 5-minute video sermon for you. Before I play it though, I want you to pull your phones out. And shoot this QR code that's coming up on the screen. And the sermon you are about to see is going to pop up on your phone. Okay? So nice. Everybody yep. shoots the QR code. Mm-hmm. Then they play the 5-minute video sermon. And instead of him talking on a stage, he's in a junkyard. And he's talking about the impermanence of life and how everybody spent so much money on these cars. And now look at them. They're in the junkyard. And then he talks about, what are you investing your life in? Are you investing it in things that are going to last? Or in these, you know, that verse about moth and rust destroy. He does a very quick, very tight 5-minute message on video. Now, as people are watching that sermon, what are they thinking? My brother needs to see this. My friend. Oh, we were just talking about this. There's a share button right under the video. Hey, I just saw this. I thought you'd like it. Boom. Or this needs to go on my Facebook. Boom. 5 minutes long, right? Or I'm putting this on such and such platform. Boom. Okay. You're sitting in church sharing the gospel with other people because you're going to reach way more people by sharing it online than you will in person. Plus, you don't forget about it. Now, 5-minute video sermon is over. Pastor gets back up and then he does a live outro. And that could be Q&A. It can be a time of response. It can be a altar call. Whatever the Holy Spirit tells him to do, he does. This is what I think the future of preaching is, where you do a hybrid sermon. The live audience gets the full meal deal, but you have this video interlude in the middle that is shareable online.
Okay.
And then, okay, now here's the other thing. Message ends, and the pastor pops up another QR code and says, now, if you would like to get daily devotions that are based on this message, on Monday, I'm going to go out to another junkyard. On Tuesday, I'm going to break a pencil. On Wednesday, we're going to throw away some food out of our, you know, he can just tease whatever it's going to be. He just does these short little video interludes. Or maybe they're not even that complex. Maybe you're just getting a daily Bible reading, depending on how much time. Mm-hmm. But you feed the flock every day as they did in the book of Acts. Okay. If I have to sum up what I'm trying to do with pastors is I'm trying to change their mindset from the weekly 40-minute brain dump to sermon being a jumping off point for a week-long discipleship journey. And you marinate people in God's word all week rather than splash it on them on Sunday morning. Okay, so let's talk about, first of all, producing a good 5-minute video.
Right.
I'm going to look around my desk here. Okay, all right. So everything, it's about visuals. And it's about the first 3 seconds. I'm just finishing a video now called Pastor versus TikTok. And what I'm doing is I'm taking TikTok videos and I'm playing them next to sermon introductions. And I'm going to show you why TikTok is so interesting and why sermons are so boring. But that's top.
That's going to be amazing, by the way.
Pastor versus TikTok. Yeah. But anyway, so pastor, here's the first thing you need to do. As you read the passage, you say, what is this like? This was the key. The kingdom of God is like. Jesus said this. The kingdom of heaven is like. He compared it to an everyday object. So as you're doing your study, and let's say your passage is Proverbs 27:17. As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And you think, all right, what's an example of something that can get dull? And then you think, oh, well, I've got this little knife here. Okay. And you can kind of see there that the blade has been used a lot. Mm-hmm. Right. And so what is the key? Can I sharpen this blade? Well, no. So I have to open this up, take the blade out, and turn it over. Or something like, now this is a horrible example. You didn't give me time to prep, okay? but what I'm saying is a video with you holding a knife is going to get 10 times more traction than a video of you holding a Bible. So as you do your study, think to yourself, what is this like? What is a common everyday object that I can bring into my talk and start my talk with, my sermon with, in my hand? So that eyeballs will be drawn to the screen. Because remember, in a church, you have an attention monopoly. You are the most interesting thing in the room. Online, you are the least interesting thing in the room, and you have to fight for attention. So that's where it starts. Step one, what is it like? What's an object I can use? What's some sort of a visual I can use to bring eyeballs to the screen?
Or like what you said before, the surroundings, right? You could be in a place that's visually interesting, right?
Yeah. And I don't know if you ever use this Right Now Media, but they do a really good job. Like Kyle Eidelman did a series on, I think it was Galatians, and he preached all around Louisville and he preached from a boxing ring where Muhammad Ali had trained. And he talked about the fight we're in. And then he preached from a riverboat on the Ohio River, or whatever river goes through there in Louisville. Ohio River. Thank you, Mr. Ohio. And so he used the backgrounds as metaphors. Kyle's a really good speaker, by the way, but he used these images as metaphors that propelled it. And see, look here, years later, I can still recall it because I saw something. I didn't just hear something. So pastor, I would say step one is just simply be in the practice of walking into a pulpit and bringing an object with you that represents what you're talking about. And if you can do that one simple step, you don't have to cut it down to, you know, to do all that stuff right away. I was talking about, just start preaching visually. Yeah. And then the other thing is you've got to recognize the importance of the first 3 seconds. So many sermons start this way. Well, good morning, church. I want to welcome you to Sunnyside Church. It is so good to see all of you in the house of the Lord today. And I want to tell you about our golf tournament we had this weekend. And by the way, how was the potluck that we had? And the women are in their retreat this weekend. Now, turn in your Bibles to the Paul's second letter to the Corinthians at the church at Corinth. And Corinth, by the way, was, your audience is gone. They're gone. So instead of starting your sermon off that way, you start off your sermon this way. I was walking through the woods when I came across a dead body. Now, or I could take this knife and cut myself really bad. Yeah, I mean, just watch the TED Talks that have a million views. It's those kind of things. Mm. How do scissors work? You have to have both sides. What if I only had one side of this scissor? What would I have? I mean, be creative. Ask God for the gift of creativity, and then ask him to be able to show you the visual that goes with what you're teaching. And that first step alone, even if you still preach for an hour, that's first step alone will get you more views online, and your audience will love you for it. Jesus is the master of object lessons, and we have to follow that example.
And that may take some time, right? I mean, until you get used to it, that may take you half an hour to an hour to figure out your visual. But once you get that, I think it gets easier from there, right? I mean, then you can dig it, you can build
it
around
it. It becomes like a muscle. You exercise it.
Yeah.
But Chris, I think God puts at least one creative person in every church.
Amen. So well said. That's right.
If you can find that person who can think visually and metaphorically, and you can say, well, you know, my passage this week is I'm talking about Absalom and David in the Bible. Now, what would my metaphor be? Bring a wig. You know? Well, that's my visual. Or how do I start my sermon? Well, here's my sermon. Here's my introduction to a sermon about David and Absalom. Why do my adult children hate me?
Yeah, that's great.
You got them. You got your audience.
Oh, my gosh. And many people who probably relate to you.
Yeah.
There you go. Every boomer is going to watch that because they've all got a kid that hates them. So this is another one of my pet peeves. In the last few years, I've seen this trend toward production values. How do we make the stage more beautiful? How do we make the smoke thicker? How do we create more special effects? Yeah. Production values are fine, but they are no substitute for basic creativity. Give me a sermon that starts with a knife over a stage that's clogged with lights and special effects and smoke every day. Because it's not about what the stage looks like. It's about what you take home in your memory. And people remember what they see. Let's talk about Jesus for a moment. Mm-hmm. Behold, the fields are white unto harvest. He turns and there's a field, right? He's captured their attention right away. Show me a coin. Whose likeness and whose inscription? He uses a visual, right? Mm-hmm. Lazarus, come forth. He uses a visual, a corpse. People remember what they see. So when you do these things, you are not corrupting the gospel. You're not dumbing down the gospel. You are doing what Jesus showed us to do. Peer-to-peer sharing is how the gospel is going to percolate through the culture. It's not going to be bringing people into our buildings as much as we love that and as needed as that is. And that may happen in some cases, but they're going to encounter the gospel first online. This is how people check out churches anyway right now. They don't show up for church. They check them out online. You see if the guy's got game. And if he's a good preacher online, then you show up in person. Mm-hmm. And so the digital world is not only a sharing marketplace, it's also your church's front door. And so if your sermon is 55 minutes long and has 12 points and 37 scriptures and stuff, people are going to like, I don't have time for that. They're going to look for a guy who can land the plane quickly and can give them something of value instantly the moment they click on there.
Man, David, what I love about this is what I felt so compelled about when I first found you back when I was a men's pastor and you were talking about this with how to lead a men's ministry, teach men and take them to places and do things with them that ingrains it in them. So I love seeing this next iteration of what you brought so long ago in kind of a new form in a sense. So here's the passage of scripture that came to mind. And I wanted to get your thought on this and maybe speaking to those who are listening right now, who are pastors, who are ministry leaders, who have this role to teach folks in their church. And I thought about 2 Timothy, when Paul is talking to Timothy about fanning into flame the gift that God gave him. It says, "For this reason, I remind you to fan into flame the gift of God, which is in you through the laying on of my hands." And then he goes on to say, don't be timid, but be empowered by the Spirit to preach, etc. But I think as pastors, to me, this is like another way for us to fan into flame the gift that God gave pastors and teachers. You know what I mean? It's just another.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I've got another prop here on my desk, a box of matches. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to strike this match. Now, how long is this match going to last?
15 seconds.
Yeah, I was thinking.
No, it's kind of a long one.
Okay.
Maybe 20, 25 seconds. Okay. And eventually it's going to go out. Mm-hmm. Now, what do I need? I need a candle. If I can find a candle and I can light a candle, it'll go on forever. Mm. What I'm talking about with online preaching coach is you work so hard to prepare your message. You put 10, 15, 20 hours of study in it every week. And then you get up in front of your congregation and you light a match, mm-hmm. and it burns strongly as you preach. Mm-hmm. But then people leave the room and it goes out. Mm. And that's where it dies. That's where it ends. Mm. Every sermon needs to be a candle. Mm. It needs to have a life beyond Sunday morning. Mm. And this is what grieves me. I did a blog post not long ago and I added up the total number of hours and dollars we spend for preaching. Protestant churches spend about $4.5 billion a year paying their pastors to prepare 300,000 original sermons every week. Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of these sermons light a fire on Sunday and are out by Monday.
Man.
So if we are going to fan the flame, if we are going to capture the flame, we have got to make sermons watchable, memorable, and shareable online where they can continue to burn long after they are preached. Now, you see how easy that was? Pastor, you can do that.
That's right.
You can do that.
And the shareable part is, you know, lighting somebody else's candle from your own. So that got that visual there. What I really like, and you alluded to this early on, and you mentioned it can happen in church after you do the five-minute video, you play the five-minute video, is you could do a Q&A, you could have some sort of interaction. I've never had that. I'm 59. I've been in church since before I can remember, right? I'm a lifelong church attender. You just don't do interaction in church. And maybe that's a step down the road because that's a radical change. But what do you have on social media? You got lots of interaction, right? You got people commenting, asking questions, and you open the door to people embracing this and then talking about it.
There are a few churches that are doing it.
Really?
After their last service, you do an optional Q&A.
Okay.
So what you do is you dismiss and you say, we're going to play in 2 minutes. We're going to play a game called Stump the Pastor. And so this actually happened at a church that I spoke at long ago in Cardiff, Wales, of all places. There was this pastor who would do the sermon. He would dismiss the crowd. But he said, those of you who want to stay, come to the first couple of rows and we're going to do Stump the Pastor. I'm going to take your hardest questions. And for 30 minutes, he said, at 30 minutes, I'm done. And so they would talk for 30 minutes about that, and he would instruct them. And you know who was in the front two rows of his church?
Young men. People. Yeah, men. Yeah.
Men, young yeah. men. Yeah. They loved this.
Yep.
So what you're talking about now is a problem. As we become more and more polarized as a society, and we're more and more about the gotcha moment, if we have interactive church stuff, somebody is going to object. Mm-hmm. They are going to interpret our words in the worst possible light. For instance, if you say we should be kind to gay people, how is that going to be interpreted? My pastor said homosexuality is blessed by God and I'm going to, you know, no, he didn't say that. He said we need to be kind to people who have this right. situation or who believe themselves to be this way. You know, he's just saying be kind, right? Mm-hmm. But when you open it up to Q&A, you're going to have people just completely misunderstand you.
That's to my son's point. What you just described is basically the pastor kind of creating a moment similar to that video my son was watching on the college campus, where you're opening yourself up to the critique, to the feedback. And I think people want to see when you're under fire, in a sense, or when you're unpolished and have to interact with emotional people, right? Versus just a stale monologue.
Well, my point is it's going to take courage to do that. But I think if you are being effective in your outreach and you're bringing new people into your church and you are truly orthodox in your beliefs, you're not saying that, hey, everything goes sexually. You're not saying that. If you can make that clear and you have a congregation of people in good faith who are willing to engage with you, you'll probably be fine. I'm just saying that one of the reasons we have made church a one-way communication thing is because of the divisions in society and because some rabble-rouser will come in here either from the right or the left, and they will, you know, oh, well, what do you mean no women pastors? He's a misogynist and he wants women back in the kitchen, barefoot and pregnant. No, he didn't say that. He just says the Bible says men best. It just opens up all these doors. And so I can understand why a pastor would not want to do a Q&A. But if that takes place online, you can actually take more control of the conversation. Right. You can delete snarky comments and stuff like that. So there may be an advantage to having that conversation online, but that's a topic for another podcast.
Okay.
All right. So, man, this has been awesome, David. Thank you for your time, brother. Tell us how folks can get in touch with you, where they can find you online.
Yes. Online, because that's where it's at. DavidMurrow.com is my website. You can go get my teachable class there. I also have a free mini course called The 9 Commandments of Great Online Preaching. If you sign up for that, you just give me your email address, and I promise not to spam, share, or sell your address. But what it'll do, then you'll get regular emails from me when new things drop, new blog posts and stuff. But this is the thing I'm going to do till I die. God has told me that I need to help pastors bring their sermons into the 21st century.
Once again, Dave's website is davidmurrow.com, DavidMurrow.com. When I created this highlights episode, I edited out quite a bit of good content from the two interviews with Dave. The complete interviews are available in episode number 3, Why Men Hate Going to Church with David Murrow, and episode number 141, Your Online Preaching Coach with David Murrow. Thanks for listening to the Throwing Mountains podcast.